my reflections on these beautiful readings are influenced by the events of this morning. Early this morning, I was told that Sister Barbara took a turn for the worse during the night. Teresita, who's caring for her, noticed her difficulty in breathing, and her oxygen level was going down, her vital signs are going down, she let us know. And so early this morning, I anointed her, gave her apostolic pardon. It was about maybe just before 6. And then we prayed the chaplet of Divine Mercy with her, and then the doctor came. And so this morning has been focused on Sister Barbara, who seems to be on the threshold of eternal life. That's why I said this Mass will be offered for the grace of a happy death. I just went in there to tell her that we're going to offer the Mass for her. You never know when a person is in her condition how much she hears and understands. So, but I told her that we're all praying for her, and in fact, the whole community is praying for her. I called her brother and in the States, and also we contacted our community in the States. So this is a serious time for Sister Barbara, and this Mass is for her. Now, the readings are actually very beautiful for someone, or in light of someone who's near the end of life in this world, because both of the readings have to do with the encounter with God. Moses meets God in the burning bush, and Jesus reveals his intimate relationship with the Father. Moses is about 80 years old in this passage, according to the traditional chronology. Sister Barbara is 86. So he's working as a shepherd, he's in the desert. He, with no advance warning, suddenly encounters this burning bush, a very strange and surprising phenomenon. God breaking into our life is always something like this. We know about God, we've heard of him, we know we've had encounters with him, but when we meet him again, it's always something surprising and fascinating, sometimes frightening, because it's God who cannot be contained, cannot be comprehended, present in the little world of our experience. We're the bush in this sense. God is the fire. The image of the burning bush has lots of levels of meaning. Some of the fathers of the church applied it to the divine motherhood of Mary. How can a virgin be a mother? The virgin is the bush, and the motherhood, her motherhood, is the divine fire. How could this woman, this virgin, contain the fullness of divine life in her womb? Well, it's something like a fire contained in a humble desert shrub. But as I say, we can apply this to any encounter with God or any awareness of the presence of God. God can't be contained in anything. In this place, in this world, in this universe, he can't be contained. His fire is too big. He burns too hot. It can't be contained. And yet, he makes himself present. So this is what he does for Moses. Calls him by name. Moses says, well, here I am. He doesn't know who he's talking to. So God tells him, well, this is who you're talking to. You're talking to the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, the God who has chosen you and your people and who knows exactly what you're experiencing, the oppression you're experiencing in Egypt, the God who has a plan to set you free. So Moses who would be blown away by the presence of God, also is given this extraordinary mission to be the instrument of God. He says, well, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt? I'm just a bush. I don't have anything. I'm an 80-year-old shepherd. God's answer is, I will be with you. The fire will remain with you. The burning bush, you won't remain sitting or kneeling here on this mountain. The fire will be in you, with you. The power that will release Israel from slavery is in you, my divine power. So this is what all of us have to keep in mind when we meet God and when He gives us something to do for Him. The power comes from Him. It always comes from Him. We're always an unworthy, lowly bush. The fire is always God's love burning in us and making itself available to others through us. Since Sister Barbara is at the hour of her death, she's closer to the fire. Eventually, the fire cannot be contained in our mortal flesh. In order to see Him face to face, we have to pass through death. We have to let go even of bodily life. And that difficult passage is what Sister's facing now, and that's why we're accompanying her with prayer and with this Mass. Turning to the Gospel, Jesus offers praise to the Father. He's always praising the Father. He's in a union of joy and love and selfless gift with the Father. He's always with the Father. But the timing of Jesus' praise of the Father is striking here, because it says at the beginning of this passage, at that time, Jesus exclaimed, I give praise to you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth. What does it mean, at that time? It seems to be connected to what we read in yesterday's Gospel, Jesus' very harsh words to the three towns along the Sea of Galilee. Bethsaida, Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum. Now, if you remember yesterday's Gospel, it was a real sharp blast. You towns, you have not repented, and you're facing a worse judgment on Judgment Day than even the horrible pagan towns, Tyre and Sidon and even Sodom. So you might, or we might, in reading that passage, think, oh, Jesus really lost his cool there and blew up at these towns, and he's fed up with them. He's did so much for them, and they didn't respond, and now he's saying, well, woe to you. As if he's just so ticked off, he doesn't want anything to do with these towns. That's a wrong understanding, but that's how it sounds to us when we read yesterday's Gospel. That's why I think it's good to put today's reading together with yesterday's. Jesus saying, woe to you, is in the very next moment saying, I give you praise, Father. He's not defeated by the three towns. He's not exasperated. He's not giving up on them. He sees the work of the Father unfolding even in this contradiction. He sees that what the Father does is reveal things to the childlike, to the little ones, which the wise and the learned just don't get. So applying it to the three towns, now these three towns are not high society, advanced culture towns, they're fishing villages. We're not talking about Rome or even Jerusalem, where the scholars and the experts all are, the wise and the learned. But there must have been something in the people of those towns which was that had this attitude of being wise and learned, meaning self-sufficient. They were not childlike. If they were childlike, they would have welcomed the mission of Jesus, his mighty deeds and his words of truth. But they didn't welcome him for the most part. And that's part of the providence of God. So Jesus, even when he has to give a sharp rebuke to the unrepentant, still praises the Lord, still praises his Father, still sees that God's will is unfolding. God hides things from the wise and the learned because they have to be humbled. In fact, they have to be rebuked. That's why Jesus did that. That's the perfect response to an unrepentant community. Rebuke, sharp rebuke. God humbles them. But God, at the same time, reveals himself to the childlike. The divine fire does not blaze out of a golden receptacle. It blazes out of an ordinary bush. The divine fire will not allow itself to be obscured by human greatness, because there's no comparison to God's greatness. He doesn't want people to be distracted by human expertise. So he chooses the little ones, the humble, childlike, and lets his fire blaze forth from them. Mary, of course, the greatest example. That's why she herself is like the burning bush. She's the most childlike. She's the one who did the least to interfere with the spread of that divine fire. And this is what we are being told to learn, to be childlike, to be little, to be accepting, to be humble. Being in the presence of a woman who is near death is a very humbling thing. You feel helpless. Well, what can you do? What can we do? Well, God gave her the sacraments. These are times when I'm very grateful to be a priest, because a priest really has something to offer to the dying, which no one else has. But the priest is still the instrument. A priest is also a burning bush, after all. So yes, we offered her, and this mass is for sister's happy death. But there is still this feeling of helplessness. What do we do now? What can we do now? How do we express our love? How do we care for someone whose whole body is rejecting the very things, you know, the medicines, the foods, the care? What can we do? So, well, what we can do is pray and trust her to God. Only God knows what his will is for her. So we entrust her to Jesus. And Jesus here says, no one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son and anyone to whom the Son wishes to reveal him. So the Son wants to reveal the Father to everyone, but only the childlike can receive this revelation. So we ask for the grace to be childlike. We ask for that grace for ourselves, for sister, for all who are caring for her, and for the whole world. May we all be accepting of our special place as children of God, chosen, unworthy, but chosen, especially loved children of God.